Chapter 4. I was standing there watching the fire with everyone else when the beat cop brought Murphy over to me. "It's about time," she said, her voice tense. She lifted the police tape and beckoned me. I had already clipped my little laminated consultant's ID to my duster's lapel. "What took you so long?"
"There's a foot of snow on the ground and it doesn't show signs of stopping," I replied.
She glanced up at me. "Karen Murphy is a wee little thing, and the heavy winter coat she wore only made her look smaller." The large, fluffy snowflakes still falling clung to her golden hair and glittered on her eyelashes, turning her eyes glacial blue.
"Your toy car got stuck in a drift, huh? What happened to your face?"
I glanced around at all the normals.
"I was in a snowball fight,"
Murphy grunted.
"I guess you lost.
You should have seen the other guy." We were standing in front of a small five-story apartment building, and something had blown it to hell. The front facing of the building was just gone, as if some unimaginably huge axe had sliced straight down it. You could see the floors and interiors of empty apartments when you could get a glimpse of them through the pall of dust and smoke and thick falling snow. Fires burned in the building, insubstantial behind the haze of flame and winter. Rubble had washed out into the street, damaging the buildings on the other side, and the police had everyone cordoned off at least a block away. Broken glass and steel and brick lay everywhere. The air was acrid, thick with the stench of burning materials never meant to feed a fire. Despite the weather, a couple of hundred people had gathered at the police cordons. Some enterprising soul was selling hot coffee from a big thermos, and I hadn't been too proud to cough up a dollar for a foam cup of Java, powdered creamer, and a packet of sugar.
"Lots of fire trucks," I noted,
"but only one ambulance. And the crew's drinking coffee while everyone else shivers in the cold." I sipped at my cup. "The bastards."
"Building wasn't occupied," Murphy said. "Being renovated, actually."
"No one got hurt," I said. "That's a plus." Murphy gave me a cryptic look. "You willing to work off the books, per diem?" I sipped coffee to cover up a wince. "I far prefer a 2-day minimum."
"I guess the city isn't coughing up much money for consultants, huh?"
"SI's been pooling the coffee money in case we needed your take on something." This time I didn't bother to hide the wince. Taking money from the city government was one thing. Taking money from the cops and SI was another. Special investigations was the CPD's version of a pool filter. Things that slipped through the areas of interest of the other departments got dumped on SI. Lots of times, those things included the cruddy work no one else wanted to do. So SI wound up investigating everything from apparent reigns of toads to dog-fighting rackets to reports of El Chupacabra molesting neighborhood pets from its lair in a local sewer. It was a crappy job, no pun intended. And as a result, SI was regarded by the city as a kind of asylum for incompetence. They weren't, but the inmates of SI generally did share a couple of traits. Intelligence, enough to ask questions when something didn't make sense, and an inexcusable lack of ability when it came to navigating the murky waters of office politics. When Sergeant Murphy had been Lieutenant Murphy, she'd been in charge of SI. She'd been busted for vanishing during 24 particularly critical hours of an investigation. It wasn't like she could tell her superiors that she was off storming a frozen fortress in the near reaches of the Never Never, now could she? Now, her old partner, Lieutenant John Stallings, was in charge of SI, and he was running the place on a strained, frayed, often knotted shoestring of a budget. Hence the lack of gainful employment for Chicago's only professional wizard. I couldn't take their money. It wasn't like they were rolling in it. But at the same time, they had their pride. I couldn't take that either.
"Per diem?" I told her.
"Hell, my bank account's thinner than a tobacco lobbyist's moral justification. I'll go hourly." Murphy glowered up at me for a moment, then gave me a grudging nod of thanks. Proud doesn't always outweigh practical.
"So what's the scoop?" I asked.
"Arson?" She shrugged.
"Explosion of some kind. Maybe an accident, maybe not."
I snorted.
"Yeah, because you call me in on maybe accidents all the time."
"Come on." Murphy pulled a dust mask from her coat pocket and put it on. I took out a bandana and tied it around my nose and mouth. All I needed was a 10-gallon hat and some spurs to complete the image. "Stick 'em up, partner,"